Welcome to City Corner, a new weekly show on KYUK on what's going on in Bethel City Hall. We'll hear the latest updates from city officials and city employees. I'm Christine Trudeau, and this week I'm talking with Mayor Rick Robb. Coming up, we'll discuss details of the 2018 budget, what's happening without a police chief, and recent tensions around the Tundra Liquor Store applicant, Cesare Mazinski, and the city planning director. We'll go now to that interview recorded last Friday.
Well, hello, it's Rick Robb here. And as people may know, I'm currently, I've been a member of city council for going on 8 years now, and I'm currently serving as the mayor.
And this is your second term?
Actually, my third term as mayor and my fourth term on council.
Are terms served in 1 year, or are they served by a set number of years?
The council is 2 year terms, and the mayor is a 1 year term.
So your election's coming up in October?
Yes, there'll be an election in October. It should actually be good election. There should be 5 seats that are coming up. So there'll be 4 2-year seats and 1 1-year seat. So we could have we could have 5 new people up there coming up.
Are you planning to run again?
I have not decided yet. Ask me that in August.
In August, okay. All right. So what do you think Bethel's current top priorities are?
Well, when we're talking capital priorities, that's what we had discussed talking about. So every year we talk about capital priorities. We submit requests to the state and also send them to our federal delegation. So last fall we voted on 4 capital priorities, which was the phase 2 of the Institutional Corridor Project, getting a new ladder truck, the H Marker Lake Road, and finishing the Small Boat Harbor Bank Stabilization Project. So those were the official capital priorities for the city for this year. Come next fall, that list will be up again. I do know the fire truck council has gone ahead and authorized payment for a 15-year lease to buy to actually purchase a fire truck, which runs in the neighborhood of $850,000 to $900,000 for a ladder truck. We have also recently, just last meeting, I believe, there was a request that came through the governor's office that was basically from the new administration in Washington, President Trump, who were soliciting capital projects, or basically infrastructure projects, that may be included as part of some federal infrastructure program brought forward by the new administration. The administration proposed water projects in the Bethel Heights water replacement, the A, B, and C loop. I propose that we work with our existing capital projects that we've been fairly consistent at for several years. The A, B, and C loops got voted in. My proposal did not. So that's, now that we're basically asking that if this, and this is all a big if and when, and it's a federal thing, and as we know, things in Washington move at their own pace, and the administration has its own issues and its own areas of improvement. So I don't, this is a big if and when, but we're looking at potential federal funding for pipe replacement. Also of note, for many years, the sewer lagoon rehabilitation project was a big capital priority. In the last year, and last 2 years, the council and administration and the former city manager worked very hard at putting together a rather complex $7.5 million project to put all the pieces together, and we're going to get the sewer lagoon rehabilitated, a new ramp, and that also got some water and sewer trucks. There was some USDA funding, some city money, some grant, some loan, and there'll be a 20-year loan. What's also interesting to note is that I did propose an action memorandum at our last meeting. It was unanimously passed, is that the city actually develop a 5-year capital plan. So administration is now tasked with developing a 5-year capital plan to look at things such as water and sewer projects, infrastructure, roads, fleet replacement, and buildings, and actually have a plan going forward, and then plan to be, you know, amended or and or approved by council, and then be renewed every year and looked at and see where are we at, what are we accomplishing, and what are we falling behind. So hopefully we'll have a better planning system for moving forward.
And that kind of makes me think about the budget. Can you talk about that, or what may have changed with the structuring of the budget?
Well, the budget has several funds, and I don't have it sitting here in front of me. I kind of wish I did if you asked me that question. But the main part is the, you know, the general fund is, you know, runs the runs the police, the fire, the city offices, the planning, the administration, city clerk is all run out of the general fund. That's funded primarily by our sales tax dollars. We also get payment in lieu of taxes, transient visit, lodging tax, alcohol tax, tobacco excise tax. Those are all the main items, and there's a few minor, you know, fees and, you know, permit fees that we pay, things like that, are going to the general fund. That is, you know, running approximately $9 million. The next biggest fund is the Water and Sewer Enterprise Fund. So that runs, you know, all the water trucks, the sewer lagoon, the two water treatment centers, and all the piping. So that's an enterprise fund. That's funded, now it's funded through our bills we pay, so that's user fees. So when we have to go down to City Hall and pay our water and sewer bill every year, that's what pays for that. In the past, that fund always lost money to the tune of $500,000 a year, and that was subsidized through our sales tax. This last 2 years is the first time it's been breaking even or even gone forward a little bit. You know, we also have a variety of other funds. There's a, you know, the pool fund where the 0.5% of sales tax goes in to help sustain operations at the pool. There's a fleet development fund. There's the port has an enterprise fund, so the port is an enterprise. So all the, when people bring stuff across the port, there's a surcharge. There's a 0.5 cent a gallon for all fuel that's brought across the port. That's a surcharge, and that runs the port operations. That helps also run the small boat harbor, which a lot of people use, and maintain the port.
So any updates with that that you think people should know about?
About the budget?
About the budget.
Okay, so as some people may know, I mean, we just spent literally a couple of months and more meetings that I can remember working through the budget. Budgets are always a laborious and sometimes tedious process. And members of council put in numerous hours going over the budget. We were working with a new city manager and a new finance director. That also made it more difficult because it is no secret that in the past our finance department has not been up to par. One of the things that we did do is when we hired a new city manager is one of his marching orders was get a finance director and get finance up to par. So we are now, he hired a new finance director. We authorized that. We now have a finance director that, as far as everyone knows, and he's looking really good and sharp, and he knows what he's doing. So we're hopefully things will go better in the future. He kept finding things as we went along, and, you know, a lot of stuff wasn't recorded right, things like that. Finance has been weak. That was one of the problems with the last city manager. That was one of the problems with the city manager before. There was also some ethical things, and we're talking ancient history now, but that was a problem. Of note in the budget is there's a couple new positions. There was a request from the fire department, and it was funded to increase the firefighters by one position. So they'll now be 8 FTEs in the fire department instead of 7. Police department was actually, because of the inability to fill all the positions, a couple positions were temporarily defunded with the intent that if they, you know, there are applicants to hire, they would be funded again. So we would love to have our police department at full staffing, but it hasn't been in more years than I can remember. There was also a new position in V&E, so there's a V&E foreman now, which we didn't used to have. Vehicles and equipment.
I see.
Which takes care of all, they're the ones that fix all the trucks and cars.
For the police position, you said that was it a sergeant position or? the time?
I believe it was a lieutenant and two patrol officers were temporarily defunded.
Is the police department still putting out,
the positions are still, still advertised.
Right, okay.
But, we do have, we had one local gentleman that I believe, right, is in the process of graduating from the police department, Mr. Charles. There's another gentleman that is going into the police department, Mr. Shago, who's a new resident in town, who's going to go to the police academy, I believe, in the end of July, and it's a four-month stint in Sitka. So for sure, we're having two new police officers, and those positions were fully funded.
Mm-hmm. For the police chief's position, how is the hunt going for that? Is the council involved in that decision-making process?
Well, currently, the city manager is actively looking for an interim police chief. And his intent, when he informed us of the changes at the police department and the retirement of Chief Ashe, is he intends to hire an interim police chief, and then, open it up for a long-term police chief. The police chief is one of two positions that the city manager hires, but the council has to concur on. So when there's a final hiring, council needs to approve or not approve that hiring. And I just would go out to say that while we're at it, we have to thank Chief Ashe for his 25 years of service to our community, because he's been involved working for the city for something like 25 years. And I think we all owe him a thanks for his service.
Now to kind of go to something came up at the last city council meeting during People to be Heard, Mr. Cesari and Byron, former vice mayor and council member Byron Michinski, spoke about an issue. Can you comment on that at all?
I sure can comment. It was definitely in public record. I understand that some of it did not go on the radio, and I didn't know that. Cesari Michinski did provide a written statement to council. Mr. Michinski has applied for a liquor license. He has to work with the planner and the planning commission to get a conditional use permit. I do know that process has been rocky, and there's been a lot of contention between Mr. Michinski and the actual city planner. Mr. Michinski stated that at their last encounter, the city planner got very irate, was yelling, cussing, using profanity, and apparently flipped him off. He brought that forward read that to the council. Feel that was very inappropriate of the planner and this wasn't personal, this wasn't off work, this was during work hours doing his duty, and that is a very extreme, that is very rude to say that.
What's the human resources approach to handling these kinds of issues as they come up for council or for city employees?
Yeah, so this now becomes an HR issue. There was an accusation, the city manager knows about it. I did tell the city manager that I think that Mr. Meyer, the city planner, needs to be appropriately disciplined. He assured me that he was going to take care of that matter. And that's all I know, because it is an HR matter. That's something that the public is not involved in and cannot be, and he can't tell us what happened. But I'm assuming that it was addressed by his boss. I did post a Facebook comment a few days later. There was a lot on Facebook, and I did say that I think that what the planner did was very inappropriate, very rude, very unprofessional, and he should be appropriately disciplined.
At the state level, what's coming in from Juneau that might be affecting the city that you think could turn out in the next couple weeks here?
Well, the biggest thing is we just got news today that I guess they finally passed an operating budget. So the state is not going to shut down next week, the state government, because that would have been a very, disservice to all of us. It would have been a disaster in some ways for the state government to shut down. I understand we need to reach a budget, but I also understand that shutting down the government, that just makes things worse. It's got to even maybe go to status quo. Long term, we all know that the state does not have the money that it did have. The days of, riding the gravy train of oil revenue, those days are over. We are facing a new climate. We are facing a new fiscal situation. We all know that we need a long-term fiscal plan to operate the state at probably a reduced level and continue on and pay for it and provide essential services. So far, the legislature, both houses, have been unable to do so, and they haven't been able to do so for the past 3 years. They're spending the Constitutional Budget Reserve, and they're spending our PFDs, and we're not getting an answer to the problem. We're just getting a Band-Aid. We're still bleeding.
Right.
So what do we expect coming in the line? Well, we're going to have less state services. We're going to have less state expenditures. We're not going to have capital projects, mm-hmm. especially big money capital projects such as we've had in the past.
And is that essentially like dipping into your retirement savings to cover your bills?
No, it's not retirement savings. The state has a constitutional budget.
Not like actual retirement savings, but as a...
It's in dipping into your savings account to pay your bills, and that's what that saving account is for. Well, and, you know, in good years, money was put in there. In bad years, they take it all out. Well, the last 3 years, they pulled it all out. There's not enough money for next year to maintain it at the current levels. So we expect less state services. One of the things that a lot of municipalities and local governments are very concerned about, and I'm not saying it's all happened, but there's a tendency for the state to try to cost shift onto local governments. This is an issue that's of concern to the Alaska Municipal League and various other things. Well, the state can't do it, so we won't do it, and local governments can, and that, of course, increases the burden on local governments, increases the tax, and local governments, they have to provide service, and you know, there's a tax one way or another. In Bethel, we pay a sales tax, and that, you know, the pressure to use our money to cover state services will increase. Another big concern with state government and as a municipality, you know, we've dealt with and something I've tried to work with on the state level and the local level is PERS reform.
What's that?
So the public employee retirement system. So back in many years ago, you know, before any of us were doing this, we had public employees. They had a retirement system. Various municipalities, some had their own retirement system. A lot of them joined the states. The states said that they will join our retirement system. So there are people now currently retired, and there are people that are near to retire that are like tier one. They call them tier one retirees. So they get a very, very generous retirement packet. Well, there's not been enough money put away to pay for that. So right now, municipalities, in fact, all employers have to pay 22% of payroll to go to PERS. So if you have an employee, and for a nice round number, if the employee makes $100,000 a year, the city, as the employer, has to pay $22,000 into the public employee's retirement system. Most of that money is not going for that employee, but it's going for people that are already retired and to pay those costs. And people that are near. It's a tremendous financial burden on the employers, which also includes the state. The state has to do this also. We are worried that the state, and they have tried in the past, to raise that 22% to a higher amount. The other, you know, the other big concern is there was a Senate bill passed in 2008 that mandates that we cannot discontinue a job class or a type of position, and we cannot spend less money than the 2008 payroll or the 2008 retirement. So there's basically a floor. So you cannot eliminate a job classification of employees, or you have to pay the termination costs and the potential retirement costs for that job class of employees for until the PERS liability is paid off, which is not going to be for like 30 more years. So if we eliminate a job class, we could potentially be on the hook for lots of money to pay for the potential retirement contributions of that class for 30 years into the future. Basically, what it does is it limits the agility of local employers, whether it be the municipalities, school districts, or this, you know, to be agile in the workforce. Sometimes positions change. Sometimes we need new positions, new job classes. Sometimes we need to get rid of old ones.
And what do you think can be done on the city level to handle that? address that?
It's actually under state law. What I have done personally as an individual member of council, as getting the city to pass resolutions and lobbying in Juneau and working with the Alaska Municipal League and trying to get them to put a little more pressure on that, is to change the state law to allow employers and municipalities to have the agility to get rid of job classes and add new job classes without fear of PERS liability while still maybe maintaining the 2008 floor. So as long as we maintain that floor and pay that much money into the public employee retirement system or more, we should be allowed to have agility in our workforce.
What kind of job classes would be, can you give me like an example of what kind of job classes would be shifting? Or
if this law went in 1808 instead of 2008, we would still have cartwrights, blacksmiths, and wheelwrights on the payroll because we can't get rid of those job classes, even though we don't need them. And now we need IT tech people and things like that. If this happened in 1908, we would have canners and millers on the payroll and radio operators. Well, we don't need those anymore. Technology changes. The workforce changes. So that is one thing. Particular issues in Bethel where this has been on the market for, you know, we've had such things as transit manager and bus drivers. That's been a big issue because one of the reasons that there's concerns about, you know, should we maintain the bus system or not? One of the features to maintaining the bus system is those job classifications are unique. And if we were to eliminate them, we would actually have to be paying PERS liability. The city actually voluntarily did a termination study, and we determined that we would have to pay somewhere between $20,000 and $25,000 a year for the next 30 years to not have those positions. And that number could go up if the state increased the percentage we have to pay. Hmm. That's been used to look at landfill operators, any kind of position. You know, several years ago, there was a proposal from the then police chief to add a assistant chief. Well, council turned that down because that would be adding a job class and we would have to maintain that job class and can remove it. One of the things that inhibits us is nobody wants to add a new position and call it a new job because then you'd have a PERS liability going forward.
It seems like an issue that would be important to kind of the next generation of workforce in Bethel.
The next generation of workforce is, yes, it is. And the next generation of workforce is paying for the people that are now retired. And well, that's kind of like Social Security, too. It's not a real good sustainable system. But I'd like to see more reform, and that's something that needs to be done at the state level.
Anything else that's coming up? 1727 is up. Has the language on that, and that's the nuisance abatement penalties and remedies that you proposed but had been worked on with Patty Burley and Eileen Arnold?
Well, right. So that ordinance came about. There was a concern that was sent to the mayor from Eileen Arnold of TWC that there are victims of domestic violence that have been afraid to report the crimes for fear of being evicted under a nuisance ordinance that states excessive police calls can be considered a nuisance. Apparently, there are people that are afraid to come forward publicly, but, you know, Arlene is speaking for them and says potentially there's even been landlords that have threatened eviction on people under these circumstances. I don't have names, dates, and open things. This is all information that from people that don't want to come forward. So felt that the right thing to do is to change the law specifically and say we cannot evict people because they're reporting crimes and especially victims of domestic violence. There was some concerns on the language. We'll be working on that to get it cleaned up by next week. Hopefully this law will go forward next week.
Is there anything else that you wanted to mention that maybe would be helpful, do you think, for the public to know about? What questions are we asking that are we not asking, rather?
So people ask questions. People asked about the Cesari incident a lot. People ask about the police department a lot. We are going to go forward. The police department is going to come under new leadership. We're hoping that we're going to have a new police chief in the future, and we're hoping that things will get better, that we will have more transparency in the police department, that we'll have be able to better have recruitment and retention of police officers. That has been a concern for a long time. We're looking forward to new leadership in the police department and hope that thing that gets better. That's a concern to a lot of people. There's been a lot of talk about that. There has been a lot of talk about the tragic incidents a couple months ago with an off-duty police officer and a pedestrian where a woman was killed. There has been a lot of concern and speculation that there was a police cover-up of a crime. What I know on that is I have spoken with the city manager. I have made public statements that it was a tragic accident, and you know, nothing anybody can say can bring them back. And there have been people protesting on the streets in Bethel. We have protesters every Saturday. Mm-hmm. I actually did go and talk to them 2 weeks ago and asked them what they were protesting and what they wanted. And, you know, mostly they want justice for the woman that was killed. It was a tragic accident. What I do know of that incident is that the incident happened. Of course, the officer involved attempted, you know, applied first aid, you know, the ambulances were called, the state troopers were called to investigate it because the incident did involve an off-duty Bethel police officer.
Right, brought in a third party.
The state troopers were unable or unwilling to respond. They did not respond. I don't know why. They were unable, not available. I'm not sure. Bethel mm-hmm. Police Department had to make a accident report, investigate the accident. That they did. They turn that over to the state troopers. State troopers have that information. I do believe that that information, that the report in the near future should come out and should go public, and we should have transparency.
What about reintroducing something like a police blotter? I know that we have an active Facebook page for a police department, but something a little bit more traditional that most cities kind of have in place. Would that be something that would help that transparency?
What we have now is regular police department press releases are coming out about incidents of significance. Those are coming out more regularly. Under members of council are now getting them regularly, so we're actually getting them.
In the past couple weeks or in the past?
In the past. Since this incident, that was one of the things that was requested, mm-hmm. is that these incidents of significance, you know, and there are press releases that members of council get them too, because we're not reporters and some of us don't live on the Bethel PD Facebook page, you know, and we rely on our information that we get. So now we're getting them. So it gives us a better idea of what's going on.
Mm. Okay. Well, if there's anything else you'd like to discuss since I have you here.
So a lot of what's coming up. You know, one thing we got to realize is a lot of people pay attention to local issues when they are concern them directly. A lot of people pay attention to local issues when they're controversial or exciting. A lot of the stuff that the city does and a lot of the stuff the council does is not so exciting. If I'm looking at the agenda, there's numerous ordinances on easements. There's been a lot of work on obtaining easements for the Institutional Corridor Project. Each one of these has to be passed by ordinance. I don't know if there's been 20 or 30 ordinances on easements. That's a big thing. One thing that is coming up, there was a proposal to place before the voters to raise a sales tax to 15% on alcohol. That was brought forward by Mr. Albertson.
Right.
That may come, that will be on the agenda for next week.
Mm-hmm.
I personally have a lot of concerns about that ordinance. I'm at this point not in strong support of it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel if we tax a legal product too much, then we will make the illegal product more affordable. One of the reasons that myself and others have supported legal sales of alcohol versus illegal sales is the fact that with legal sales, we could maybe reduce illegal sales and have more control over at the point of sale. If we raise the price of the legal product too much, it makes the illegal product more affordable. So I have very big concerns about that.
You think the 3% addition to it, bringing it from, what was it, 13% to 12%?
It's currently at 12, and it'll go to 15%, which is the highest sales tax I've ever heard of for anything. So it's a very, you know, it's a very high tax. I mean, some people say, I mean, it was voted in by the voters to go to 12%. Some people say it's justified because of the nature of the product, because it's alcohol, because of, you know, things like that, you know, the idea of a sin tax, you know, or a vice tax, which many vices are taxed a little extra. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a lot extra. I just think that might be too much. At some point, we're going to too high.
I see.
Another thing that's on the agenda is I propose an ordinance to change how we do our budgets. Currently, we have a budget process. We have a deadline. Have a budget passed by June. Under the Bethel Municipal Code, a budget must be passed by June 15th. If it's not passed by June 15th, then whatever is in proposal in its current state automatically becomes the default.
Oh.
Yes. So had we not reached agreement by June 15th, whatever was already on the table would have been adopted by code. And I think that is not the right way to do things. This particular budget process, we probably came closer to doing that than in the past. Mm-hmm. I've actually proposed a budget that's saying that's going to go away, or excuse me, an ordinance right. to the budget process mm-hmm. to say that's going to go away. If we don't have a budget and July 1st rounds around, we'll just maintain essential city services at a status quo, not shutting down the government. Don't want to do that. That doesn't do anybody any good, and that ends up costing more in the end.
Mm-hmm.
But the ordinance I proposed is very simple, stating if we don't have a budget, if we don't have a new fiscal year budget by July 1st, we will maintain essential city services at the status quo until we've adopted a budget.
Which would mean a lot more special budget meetings for you.
It would, but it wouldn't, one, automatically drop to default that people have not agreed on and not necessarily liked. And two, we don't want to shut the government down. Like the states right. threatened to, like the feds did once or twice. You know, that doesn't do anybody any good.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to remember, most of what the city does is essential city services. I mean, we have public safety. We have our water and sewer. We have our trash. We have our port. You know, those are what I identified as essential city services. We don't want to be shutting the port down July 1st or July 2nd. That's mm-hmm. when our port season's business.
Yeah.
So we get most of our goods is through the port.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for being here on City Corner.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
Tune into KYUK tomorrow at 6:30 to hear the Bethel City Council meeting live from City Hall. Thanks for listening to this week's City Corner. Got general questions about what's going on in City Hall? You can submit them anonymously by emailing news@kyuk.org. I'm Christine Trudeau, and thanks for listening to City Corner on KYUK.